unavoidable anyhow. And most people ignore it, neglect it. Some people around them die, they don't know what's happening. And at some point they die themselves, they don't know what has happened. And I at some point realized that a lot of people around me were scared about dying or wanted to remain ignorant about dying. So I did a workshop, I invited to the mountains and said, basically, on this weekend you're going to die. So come Friday and you better prepare. Because on Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the Buddhist meditation deep time of the day, you're gonna die. So what do you need to arrange? Who needs to know? What do you need to get rid of? Where it's going to go? Are the people you need to say farewell to, or is there a fist you need to slam on a paper somewhere still? Actually, is it necessary? Because if you had died already, would that be necessary? So what do you need for dying? And there are many shamanic techniques which essentially do the same. Some they actually bury somebody overnight and then they have to wake up in the morning, it's cold and shivery. I'm not sure that that adds to the experience, but it is definitely good to know that sometimes you need to let go of things and need to realize that, okay, if this is where my life stops, how terminal is that? Because as you might have noticed around you, there are a lot of people who are quite aware, quite sure that they are immortal. It's not always the case. There is somebody who looked at people who are old, and for him 200 years old was the minimum, and I'm not sure if he found 13 or 30, but in any case, there were more than abundant to show that it is possible and that it does exist. And there are some descriptions of people who are really, really old. Has some old Chinese texts, for example, that they found somebody more than 200 years old and they brought him to the court of the emperor and the next day he died. There is a kind of fine tuning which is required to live and keep on living well. And if you shake the system, then it doesn't necessarily mean that it will work well with that. So it's not just about living forever, but also living in balance with the environment. The aging process is something which I now look at as an accumulation of unresolved issues. And one of the unresolved issues that people think that they are aging, so that in their mind and in their body they stop being playful. And they sort of start to slow down, they start to lose interest. And in a way, you could sort of interpret it as the body saying, well, if you're not doing it anymore, why should I be doing it? And the other way around, that a lot of people think that their body will take care, but they can neglect it as much as they like. And then at some point where the body says, well, okay, this is where it stops, they say, yeah, but this is not what I wanted, I wanted more. So, well, you never took care of the engine, you never oiled it, you never lubricated it, never do the healing meditation, so you didn't. There are also some texts, also many Chinese, Indian, where they look at longevity. And basically it's the balance between survival and longevity. First you need to survive so that you can continue to exist. And then longevity is that you can continue to exist. And longevity is a kind of hygiene that you need to do to get rid of all the stuff that doesn't work and put in the stuff that does work. And so there are quite a number of techniques which are described in Chinese and Indian text, where sexuality is being used to revitalize the body system. to essentially use orgasm to clean out the pipes of the electromagnetic system of the body and let go of all the charges by discharging them, so that the accumulation of errors and grit in the machinery is gone. And then, of course, you increase the lifespan. When I talk about grit and dust in machinery, that's used as a metaphor. And I really want to make that explicit, because there are doctors in hospitals who then say, yes, the machine is wearing out. And that is a nice example of how these doctors do not understand the body. The body does not wear out. The neglected body, or the half-dead body, the ignored body, which is no longer vital and is being treated like a machine, responds like a machine. And so if people lose their own sensitivity and they lose their own feeling, for example, you have the group of people who is inherently angry and who consistently are in their mind making a fist at things. They are creating rheumatoid arthritis because their muscles are actually pulling their fingers into their joint, thinning the capsules, the cartilage of the joint, and then making them atrophied, so basically half dead. So the sensory system loses out and the self-repair system loses out. So in order to avoid that, you need to open the body, relax the body, extend the body, expand the body, so that it has space for itself and also space for you. And then the tensions which pull the cartilages together can relax and the cartilages can regrow. You shouldn't wait too long with things like that. I'm referring to this because the process of death and dying often is not as clear-cut as it seems. I have met people who died, but it was evident that they had already shut off 40 or 60 years before. So for me it was very surprising that their body, in spite of it having been gone dead already much earlier, the one inside it having gone dead long ago before, that the body still kept on going so long. But it gave me an understanding of this intricate barrier between life and death, which is not a clear-cut edge, but sometimes it's very fractal and very extended and very interwoven. And that's also where I had this notion that sometimes whoever is in it is already gone, but the body just keeps on going. And sometimes there is an experience inside where everything just goes up and the body collapses with it. Or there are situations where part of the body was simply switched off and it already died, but the rest around it not yet. And the same in the mind, that some of the experiences already stopped and there's a much smaller soul being inside than before because of soul damage. But the body still can compensate, or it's the other way around, that the body is the only one that shows that there's something really wrong, that the one living in the body all feels happy and healthy because everything that was problematic was so nicely swept under the carpet. But under the carpet there lives the body, and so then all the kind of things happen to the body. Why would that be? So with that kind of understanding in mind, that life and death is very multivariate, I'd like to look at a different aspect of death and dying, which is that the shift of consciousness that takes place. Specifically, there are some drugs which have effects on the body which are like the process of dying. I'm not going to name them because it's good that people realize that drugs is not the way to do things. But so, for example, one of those drugs, when you take it, you actually go through four stages of disconnecting from your body, from your being. And the fourth stage of it is that you see the effect of everything you've done on everybody else. And that's the same as has been described by some of the people who died and survived to tell the story. There's quite a number of those. And one of them, he died of lightning, and then a photocopier machine zapped 10,000 volt into him, so he died again. And he had another chance at it again sometime later. And one of the experiences was that he, in his dying process, realized that the example which he gave, that at some point he was taking the elevator and there was an old lady trying to get in, and he had pushed the button to go up and the door closed. But in that experience he suddenly felt how it was from the other side. So what he had done to that woman was his experience. And it is that understanding which basically is the reason why I want to tell this story, because evidently everybody at some point will die, and yes, it's good to realize that you will die and prepare for it, but when you prepare for it, the only thing that you can prepare for is what you experience from this side of the story. But when you go through the death transition, which you might well understand as a kind of birthing process, as say the counterpart of birth, I'll come back to that in a minute. Then when you go through that dying process, you find yourself on the other side of where you are now. And the other side of where you are now is just as unimaginable as when you were in the womb and there was this big world outside of you. This culture is highly active and hyperactive on ignoring death and dying. There's this whole pretense that it doesn't take place, and then at the moment that it does take place, the government or the church claims your body. They will mark it with their market and number it with their number and list it in their lists and put it in their terrains and the repositories. So in a way they claim your body. Some might even say that that actually means that they claim your soul. But in the death and dying experience, whatever you can see on it on this side is evidently not taking place on the other side. So there is a strong difference between the reality that we are hidden here and the reality after death. There are other cultures, China, India, other places, where they have lots of descriptions of people having death experiences, dying experiences, and rebirth experiences. The little Indian boy who kept on running back to the village quite a while further away because that is where he lived. And indeed that was where he died, but in a different body. So there are lots of those stories, but somehow they are always swept under the carpet, ignored, pretended that it's not so. Because of course, if you are immortal in that sense, then the whole slavery spiel doesn't work very much. It is sort of symptomatic for this culture that suicide is punishable by death, as it used to be in the past. If you try to kill yourself, we'll kill you. Which was basically a means to show that slaves could not get out of the game, by killing themselves. So it was essentially a clamor to other slaves that if you die, we'll still get to you. So a lot of what we experience about the culture of death and dying is still based on those kind of principles. So we must not forget the history of the more barbaric side of the culture, actually with the money slavery, that really didn't change. But it does mean that we need to look at the other aspects of it. There have been many people who studied what happened in death and dying. For example, the cardiosurgeon in the Netherlands who collected all the stories of people who were under narcosis, and essentially some of them went to a death experience, had the heart stopped, everything stopped. And so he interviewed all of them and said, okay, clinically you're dead. Did you notice anything? And so he collected lots of the stories, and a lot of people did notice something. A lot of people had a very clear-cut description of things happening, and they had very strong visual imaginings or visions of things. Some of those visions were quite similar, and some of those visions were quite similar to stories which are normally commonly told. So he was a widely respected cardiologist, so when his book came out, people were very surprised, and in a way they tried to do as if he had never written it, because as a doctor you're not supposed to. But how as a culture can we get the understanding of death and dying if this hide-and-seek play is going on? So it's better to look into it to understand it, and better said, to prepare for it. Because if in dying you actually harvest your whole life, then the story of heaven or hell is in a way true, because when you look at your life and your body, then it is evident that when you die you don't take your stuff along, and your body is part of your stuff. So what do you take along? Evidently the only thing that you take along from one day to the other when you sleep is your experiences in life. So somehow they are unperturbed by what you're doing in your sleep and in your comatose state. And information, of course, is not material. The only question is, if the information in the life as you lived it and as you collected it, if it can be integrated, if it can be connected, as Dan Winter nicely says it, will it pass through the vortex? Is the life experience that you have so coherent that there is no friction, no opposition, and no disconnectedness in it, that when you swirl it through the dip point of the dying moment, that the whole vortex can go through and there are not left parts left behind? It's a bit the story also of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where they simply say that at the moment of dying you will release all of your experiences from your body, but that also means that you will release all your toxic, pathological and emotional charges from the body, especially if you've hidden them under the carpet. So that's the essence of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So when you're dying, take into account that you will have all these kind of things sort of whirling around you, attracting your attention, but realize that if you give them attention, you will actually dive right back into them. So if you want to get out of this cycle of incarnations, reincarnations, then you must actually disconnect from those experiences and realize that the experiences that you had is not what you became. The leaves of the tree are not the tree itself as it goes through winter. So in that experience, you then have to have a realization that whatever you lived must fit in with everything else that you've done. But as with the picture of the old woman in front of the elevator, also what you have done to others, you have actually done to you. So for example, all these banksters who are basically robbing everybody else, at the end of their life they'll just discover that they have become very poor in their soul, because you harvest what you have done. So the principle of karma and dharma, it's essentially nothing else than dharma is are principles by which this whole universe operates, and karma is when you interact with it, every action you have will have a sequence of reactions, and so you must be able to deal with that too. And for your life as a whole, that will work as well. So everything you've done to everybody is what you is the sum total of what you have become. So that makes the dying experience a different kind of construct. As the saying has it, that man's shirt has no pocket, so you can't take nothing along. But what you do take along is the full experience of everything you've done to yourself, to others, to the universe, and to the planet. The dying moment itself, as I said earlier, to come back to that, can be compared to the birth experience. And this is the embryologist Jaap van der Waal presenting his view as an anthropologist, anthroposophist. He looked at the embryology and at the phenomenology. So the anthroposophists are very well aware that the form of the body is the consequence of the function of the body. The body is not the thing, but the consequence of the thing. So you need to look not at the form, but at the phenomenon, what's doing it, how it's doing it, so that you can understand the deeper layers of it. And then Jaap van der Waal also said, well, when you look at the moment of birth, first you have this internal world, this cocoon in which you are being born, your body is being developed, and then at some point the balloon can't stretch no more, and it reverses direction, out you go. But very specifically, in the moment of catapulting you out, you are catapulted in a rotation motion, in a vortex. So the principle of the vortex, of turning things inside out, you can see in the moment of birth that you rotate through. And then where first you were, you had your twin brother in the placenta, or your twin sister, or let's formulate it a bit differently, you have one body and you have the boot up system. And nowadays in the rocket technology you would say you have the booster and you have the rocket. So the two of them are there, and that's also why in a lot of in many forms of healing, the placenta is kept as part of the medicine of the young born. Some cultures look at it as this came from the mother to form the body, so it goes back to the mother, she eats it, and of course all of the nutrients go back into her system, because it is an energy station, a nutritional station. It filters the blood and prepares the food for the fetus. So there is this relationship between the life in the womb and this totally unknown life outside of it. And for the fetus inside of the womb, that's the life, that's how it is. And there are all these noises and sounds that come from the environment, and at some point that's part of the world story. But there is no understanding, no imagination what happens outside of the egg. So once the chicken hatches out of the egg, the baby is born in this spiral turn, then suddenly this whole new world opens up. And the connection to the twin brother body of the placenta sort of stops and shuts off, and only then should it be cut. Then the baby slowly learns to become an individual being. So Jaap van der Waal said that picture of the fetus in the womb with the placenta is not much different from the earth being our womb, your body being the placenta, and your soul the one being born. Yes, there are lots of people who have been told that the soul doesn't exist. Happy hunting to them. When you look at your life, you can see that in everything you do, you take decisions. All these decisions you interlink and interconnect. All these decisions are organized like a kind of spinal cord of your whole organism, using freedom of choice. So every choice you make, you create another fixation or another manifestation, materialization, another decision, crystallization of the life you want to lead. So there definitely is a kind of spinal cord to the life that you live. So why not call that the soul? And why not say that the soul is based on the concatenations of all the life choices that you make? But if all these life choices hang together, and they apparently hang together so well that all kinds of diseases don't really unravel it. Yes, there are some psychiatric diseases and some other afflictions which seem to work at that level. And evidently the word psychiatrist from psychiatros, the soul doctor, they supposedly need to understand or should understand that. Often they don't have notion of the soul. And often they regard it as a kind of software glitch in a computer. And so they change the doping in the food. They add some molecules into your diet, as a result of which somehow the program should be able to repair itself. In most cases, it's just like the cardiac medicine. They put a brick on the brake so that the accelerator, which should be fixed, does not need to be fixed. It's much better to actually fix things by understanding things. Same for the soul. But in this context, I'm simply referring to it to call up a different picture of what happens upon death. Because if people die and then come back later with memories of that, then the notion of the Western world that you die and that's it is not quite the whole picture. Likewise, the notion of when you die, if you're good, you go to God, if you're bad, you go to the devil, that's not quite the good picture either, because you probably think you do good, and does that mean that God is the devil and that the devil is God? There are some people who actually operate that, the Luciferians. So you have your choice in that too, but that's just a choice in what you want to believe. So the more crucial question is what actually happens. And the interviews with the people who are dying helps a bit, but it's not your experience. The experience of people that you know might be more convincing. Yes, I've met people who have died and had to reactivate themselves to come back to life again. I've met people who have very clear memories of things that they experienced, but couldn't have experienced because in this body is this time, that couldn't be. I have an experience of a life in the time that I live, in a place that I did not live, in the body that was living somewhere else at the same time. So that's very interesting that I have memories of a lifetime that I have not lived. So it means that we do have all kind of possibilities to link thoughts and experience and learning patterns into a body. And we can even split them off and have them do their thing and later reconnect. And this is something which in shamanic practice is called soul retrieval. So they are much more aware that there are parts of your experience, part of your psychic development, which will do their things, and sometimes they break off, and sometimes you get them back and connect them back up. And some people actually abuse that kind of stuff, trauma-based mind control. But those people at some point will discover that what they have done to others, they have done to themselves, so they'll get there. But the more intriguing part of the death and dying experience is that you will need to live through it. And in a way, you already regularly live through it. And that is essentially the moral of the story for now. That at some point, you will go to this pivotal turning point of this new birth of getting out of your body. And actually, the Tibetans have a specific breathing technique and a specific shout. And then they use a specific chakra and just shoot out of the body and leave their body behind. It's like an out-of-body projection, except in that case, they don't come back. So there are lots of descriptions of the relationship between death and dying, and most of these descriptions are very clear in formulating that the body is actually the container, the material carrier for what it is actually about. That what it is actually about is not physical, not material, and it does have its own relation, connectedness, and substance to it. There's more to say about that in a story about normal para. Normal para is the realization that paranormal is a misnomer for understanding, because paranormal basically says it is outside of the normal. But what we're dealing with is a normal para. There's a whole lot of stuff outside of what we know. And what happens after death and dying is part of that. So now I want to bring it to something which is much more practical. Because if you're going to die at some point anyhow, why not practice? If you're learning to go outside of your body, why not learn it? As one of my friends, he fell out of trees so often that he learned to go out of body. So when he died, he wasn't surprised at all. He wasn't scared. He realized that something needed to be done. He did it, and then he kickstarted his body again, so he could live on again. It was quite a car accident in which that happened, but as he had been falling out of trees already, he knew what it was to be out of body. So going out of body and going out of consciousness needs to somehow be connected. So on the one hand, meditation helps to go from the understanding of consciousness as being aware of what happens around you to understanding that consciousness exists within the cells of your body already. They have a full understanding of what happens in the universe. So that's one part of the story, that you actually need to invert the realization of what consciousness is and go through the steps of meditation, so that at the deepest level of meditation you can be alert and awake and aware of what's happening there, so that you can navigate in that space. The other part is that in the death cycle, your body will disconnect, so you need to be able to be outside of your body. As one of the women I knew said, whenever I have a childbirth, I dislike it. I leave my body to it and I go out, hang in the corner of the ceiling somewhere. So when you can do that, then what the body is doing in switching off is not part of your story. The body can simply do what it needs to do and what is part of the body's being, but you don't have to be pulled into it. Let me describe you the story of a woman I met once when I was on a trip in Egypt. We came out of the temple. She had a splitting headache. She knew how to meditate, so I asked her to go into a meditative state and go back into that temple and go back to that moment where the headache started and look at what was happening at that time. So as it turned out, she went into the meditation, she went back into the temple, she went back to the moment of the start of the headache, and she found herself being walled in behind bricks in that temple, because some 2,500 years ago she had been lying, maybe it was much longer ago, and she was aware that if you lie, you're bricked in behind the temple wall, because nobody wants to have anything to do with anybody who lies. So there she was, walled up behind the temple, and there were these scary guys bringing in the bricks. So I asked her, well, okay, talk with these guys on the inside and ask them what's happening. And so they said, okay, you lied, and you know that that's the rule of the game, so we're doing this. So I asked her, okay, so how did they feel about it? I said, well, you know, it's a contract. We're doing our part of what you asked us to do. And so it's all okay. And then she was walled in and everything was dark. And I said, well, okay, so you're looking with your outer eyes still. Why not turn on the inner eyes? So suddenly everything was light, bright and light again. And she could see the space, but she could also see that the oxygen was running out. So I said, okay, well, this is a nice time to look in your body and ask the body, what can you take along? And then basically she went around through all of the body organs, said goodbye, said thank you, and was given a charge of energy to take along, and left the empty shell of the organ behind. So she basically came out with this bundle of light balls of her organ experiences. And then also for the brain, everything. And so basically she thanked her body and stepped out of it, but took along all of the memories of it. And then she suddenly said, but das ist ja aber wunderschön, because she was Austrian and she was suddenly out in the outer space. She was no longer this reality, she was in the universe as a whole. And this was where I got a bit iffy, because this was the first time that I was witnessing any of this. And I know that being in a place which is so wunderschön can be enticing. So I said, okay, do look around, do realize that you got here, do realize that it is here. Anchor point creation, and make the possibility so that you can come back here and link onto it. But at the same time, I want to remind you that you still have a body sitting outside of a temple in Egypt on planet Earth in some year, something. So maybe at some point you could decide to come back here. So after a while she did, she came back in the body, and then basically got up, walked over to the wall, moved with her hands over the hieroglyphs and started reading them. While she said, I cannot read this. So there are different kind of experiences that people can have associated with death and dying, which for me, have put in question everything that I know about it. I still have to have no opinion about it. At the time that I die, I will know. There are two more stories that I wish to connect up to it. One of them was that the edge between life and death is much thinner than I realized. But one of my friends died. I was really shaken, because this was a really neat guy. He's clever, enthusiastic, bright, friend of the student club where I was, and he had died. So something in me was totally shaken. In a way, I just dropped into the mystery. The floor had dropped from under. I was suddenly aware of something that I didn't grasp at all. And so it turned out that after 3 days, he came back to me and said, well, actually, you're sort of farting these clouds behind me. He used different words. He used very elegant words, very clear. But I'm trying to portray the picture of the meaning of it. And that's not how we knew each other. And actually, you're sad about you and not about me. And we don't know each other in this way. So please, could you do that differently? He had a couple more things to say, which were all very accurate. And I then also understood that two important things. One, that it was from that specific deep emotional state that that connection was possible. And the other was that evidently he was much more aware of me in the living domain than I was aware of him in the immaterial domain. So that was quite a learning moment. I'm just trying to remember, because there was another aspect of death and dying which I wanted to speak about, but in a way I just went back into that moment of that experience so much that I actually shift perception and consciousness for a moment, which happens, which is the whole story of death and dying. Oh yeah, I remember the other part of the story is that in death and dying, and specifically by an organ transplantation, people in specifically Hollywood say, well, he was instantaneously dead. So the inventor of the guillotine thought that he was doing people a favor by chopping off their head instead of having people be hanged. It took a while, but then people decided that killing others is not useful anyhow. So they changed that whole idea. But the notion that somebody is sudden death when you chop off their head is a strange idea. Because if anybody stops breathing, then it takes 6 minutes before the brain starts to die. So the oxygen supplies of the brain are enough for 6 minutes. So you need to realize that your death experience will probably be 6 minutes. Unforeseen circumstances, that a pyramid falls on your body, you're smashed like a bug on a windshield, taken out of the equation for a while. If your body is intact, functional, and something stops in the body, then if your consciousness is connected to your brain, then you would have 6 minutes experience on what's happening. So then it is much more practical to be prepared for that and practice meditation so that you can follow the cycle from outer world to body world to organ world to cell world, so that you can shift your attention and it's basically the same like in self-hypnosis and self-anesthesia. You can relocate your attention to a place where you can work with it and can actually let go of the body. So that's one part of the story. The other part of the story is that you're actually living with the body, and the body is actually living a lot of things for you. So it is also a good idea to get to know the body and feel into the body. That's where I then always say feel well. The more you feel the body, the more you can discover about the body, and the more you can get close to the body, but at the same time realize that you're not the body, and that something which seems to be entangled suddenly becomes a double-sidedness, a duality. That's what the Egyptians had called the ka and the ba, the body and the soul. That both of them are there. And the sephirot of the Hebrew, actually Egyptian system, portrays that. In the moment of dying, you do that transition of the shift between the physical and the non-physical. All of the physical parts of you stay behind, So as I sometimes say, if you go to a funeral, you know that the dead person is not there, because that's why their body is brought to the cemetery. So if you want to contact the dead person, don't go to the cemetery, but go to where they are. But in order to be able to go to where they are, you need to practice that. And that's where you have a lot of experience, a lot of insight, which has been written down, passed on in the mystery trainings, mystery schools, in the yoga teaching, and the tantric teaching, in the shamanic trainings, in the magical trainings. Some of them have been distorted for other purposes. Some of them have actually hidden things. For example, the yoga system, they don't show you that the hara is one of the main chakras. So in a way you cannot turn on the system even if you use it properly, even if you know it properly, because you just missed the key to the whole system. And so once you realize that, there are many sources of knowledge of that relationship between life and death. But actually your own body is doing that all the time, and the transition between sleep and waking is the pivot where you experience that most clearly. So the more you're aware of that, the more you can get to know it, and the more you can, in a way, let go of it and trust it. And yeah, let me just round it off here with the conclusion that at some point you'll know what this is all about, because you'll experience it. And for the rest, it's all storytelling. This story too.